Open the House Rural Communities Land Use and Water Committee. Today is March 24th, and we are going to finish up our testimony from our other bills from last week. So let me open a public hearing on House Bill 3211. We lost Mike Miller to a dental emergency, so why don't I ask and see if other people are here. Jim Standring, I know, is here. Kent Sida. And they want to come up with a group?
They did.
Okay, and then how about...
From the back.
Oh, that's a different bill. Dan Chandler.
Dan's running late.
How about Michael Wise? Didn't we hear from Michael the other day, though? I think we heard from Michael Wise the other day. Mary Kyle here? Yep. And... Great. Jim, I've got you first.
Good afternoon, Chair Clem, members of the committee. My name is Jim Standring. I build homes for families in Washington County, Multnomah County, Clackamas, and Marion County since 1976. I love Oregon, and so do my 6 kids and 9 grandkids. I own property on Johnson Road in Stafford Triangle. I disagree with the Hamlet's proposed HB 3211. Compromise, they do not speak for me. They do not represent me. I urge your committee to please pass HB 3211. Contrary to Metro's testimony before your committee last week, prominent city leaders, incredible housing and employment land need research challenge the merits of Metro's urban growth report. Determination that the region has enough suitable and developable land for housing and jobs for the next 20 years. Recent testimony before your committee about Damascus disincorporation also very clearly reveals how unreliable the UGR findings are. Adoption of HB 3211 would provide urban reserve lands that is suitable and readily developed for a full range of housing types, choices needed by the current and future families in Clackamas and Multnomah counties. I hope, however, that the legislature will go further. I hope that you will start to fix our broken land use system itself. It has increasingly lost its way. It's demonstrated by the present UGB expansion remands and failures on the part of Oregon communities and by recent bills to ratify unsuccessful UBG expansions. There are attached possible fixes in my letter that you have in front of you. I've observed our land use laws for years, including as a past president of the Portland Home Builders Association, and I'm a current board member, and as a past president of the Oregon Home Builders Association. My comments today are mine, however. In 1973, Senate Bill 100 was signed into law. It was jointly supported by the home builders, business, and the environmental community. We all wanted to protect Oregon's natural resources, agriculture, and forests. We also wanted effectively predictable, balanced land use rules in a system that would provide and assure Oregon's communities adequate land for jobs and home as they grew over time in a timely manner. Today, that system fails in all attributes. I enjoyed working with Henry Richmond, a Thousand Friends, on issues we agreed with. And we surprised many legislators by jointly supporting issues and agreeing to leave disagreements at the curb. Regrettably, Oregon's land use system forged in 1973, our current land use law, is not just broken, it's shattered. It desperately needs to be fixed by the legislature. Numerous contorted and complex LUBA and court land decisions have made the system unrecognizable, fraught with legal pitfalls, and simply unworkable. I truly hope this committee will recommend passage of HB 3211 and importantly take up needed challenges to the land use system and bring it back to where it belongs. Thank you for considering these remarks.
Great, thank you. And Kent?
Thank you, Mr. Clem, for your donation to the baseball equipment that was stolen across the way, and I think give you applause for helping them out.
My pleasure.
So I don't know if that's appropriate at this time, but
yeah, I'll take it.
We try to help. Try to help kids when we can. You're a good example. I really wholeheartedly. My name is Kent Sita, and my property is at 21895 South Salomo Road, Westland, Oregon. I really support what the gentleman next to me has spoken. We've been on our farm, and I hope that you got copies, the hard copies that I had the gal pass out last week. You know, we're up here on the top, and you know, we're five generations on our farm. Really, the last of the old timers up there, and we still raise some cows on what we have left. But the time for agriculture in that community is past. My uncle had a raspberry and chicken farm on the exact ground where David Douglas High School sits in Portland. Now they're way beyond that, and that's where we are. The negativity, as far as we've been brought into the urban growth boundary twice, Westland, Tualatin, Lake Oswego, has gone to the Court of Appeals and got us tossed out twice. There's no. Now it's expanded, of course, to the Stafford Triangle, and there's no better property to be moved forward on the development chain than the Stafford Triangle. I'm 75 years old. One of my sons lives in the house that my dad built, dug the basement with a team of horses, and like I say, we're some of the last people. All of my kids worked in agriculture. I've got six in my family that are Oregon State graduates. And why does that happen? Because they knew how to work. They worked on the farm. They worked baling other people's hay. They worked setting irrigation pipe. And it was good. But those days are gone. They're never coming back. There's never going to be a chicken ranch and a raspberry farm where David Douglas High School sits. And so we need to look at expanding the urban growth boundary, and particularly here. We've heard some testimony against it by people saying, oh, well, we need more infill in Portland. There's land still available in there that we can do. We need to have mother-in-law quarters over our garage and all. That is so terrible. Now when I was a kid, we had one murder in about a year in Portland. The Peyton Allen murder. I mean, it took about 7 years to solve it. Now there's one a day. And we want more infill, kids packed into Portland, really like rats. Let's expand out. History has something to talk about. And the Roman Empire was great for a period of time. And when they developed property, they developed a city site that would be for 10,000 people, and they had in a water system, a sewer system, and they had what they called complete communities where people lived and worked in the areas, and they didn't go further. And when the population filled the ground available, they moved on and built another city. They didn't just go higher and higher and pack them in. We need, I think, really to follow their example, and we need to expand the urban growth boundary. Oddly enough, we have property in the Damascus area, and I represented Damascus on Metro for about 5 years when the mayors go in every 3 months or whatever, and I worked on getting the city brought in. The reason Damascus was brought in, if you want to get down to the bottom line of it, was the money spent in putting all the infrastructure in the water system and so on did not want to be taken over by Happy Valley, who live up in their little thing that don't even have a convenience store. There's a fire station and a water bureau, and then they end up running the whole thing. So Damascus was, in a way, a bit of a mistake, and I worked on the city, bringing that in and so on, but didn't want to get there. But I think the Stafford Triangle represents so much more in the possibility of development. It has all the infrastructure. It has the freeway system, the main freeway, 205. It has room available to widen the freeway system. It's my understanding there's adequate water from Wilsonville's treatment plants that they put in the Willamette. I think they're well over capacity. They would love to have a place to put it, is my understanding. The topography of the Stafford Triangle and the soil make it totally useless in this day and age for any agricultural endeavors that would be financially rewarding. Like I say, when I was a kid, if you had 20 acres, a few milk cows, a hive of bees, maybe you worked a little bit at the sawmill, at the paper mill or something like that, you could raise your family nicely. At that time, you could trade 3 steers and get a Ford 9N tractor. You could trade 6 steers and get a new pickup. Now it's 30 steers. It's just not feasible anymore. And so that ground is just laying there idly. Our property was really taken by force. We fought all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. We were taken into condemnation. You know, there's nothing, there's 3 things government can do to a person that's really bad. One is kill them, two is put them in jail, and 3 is taking their land by force. And we've had that happen to us several times. And you can see a big notch in there. Well, what was that notch created for? It was taken to put in a school. Well, it's really not a school now. It's a sports complex. This has turned into a sports complex that rents out to people all over the country. There's a PA system from 7 in the morning till 10 at night. The lights are blaring away. My cattle won't even come up to the barn because of all the activity. We've still got a few cows there. We were left. They took all our good fields, turned them into a sports complex, left us with a rock pile. Westland's a bit rocky. And then now my cows, kids throw rocks at them or whatever, harass them when they come up the lane we still have left to get to the barn. It's not a viable farm. And to be honest about it, you say, well, you're the landowner, you got 40 acres there and so on. I really don't have an axe to grind in this fight at all. I'm 75 years old, cancer survivor, got heart problems, this and that. Development is not going to happen probably in my lifetime. But I've been involved for 25 years with Mount Hood Water, Sunrise Water, Damascus Water, involved, like I say, a little bit with Metro, with Clackamas County Plan. And there is a time to bring the Stafford Triangle in and study it. By the time it gets around to doing anything, like I say, I don't have a dog in the fight, I'll be dead by then. But if you should at least bring it in and start making plans as to how to handle it. And I really support House Bill 3211. Like I say, the day of farming is past. I enjoyed coming last week when we didn't get to testify and listen to how it would be nicer to have more radishes in the school lunch menu. And I think that is a positive thing in areas that are still farming. That's a great thing. But this farming community is dead. It's not going to come back. It's not going to happen. And to not get moving forward with a master plan of how to lay it out and end up kind of with another Damascus, not to bring something up, but Damascus kind of slipped by its time. It should have come in a little sooner. Here you still have a lot of open ground. You have a lot of topography that will lend itself to open spaces, and you have development portions. And to be honest about it, you need to not, the people who are fighting the urban growth boundary have a bushel of apples. And so, because they have this bushel of apples, an apple's worth a lot of money. So then they say, we don't want to have another bushel of apples here because ours will be worth less. Most of the fighting about this is not in good planning, but in financial interests of the people who are currently in the urban growth boundary. And I think when you're planning with your pocketbook or have people talking about, we've got all the ground and not, Go into Portland, look at the gang situation, look at the overcrowding, look at the apartment complexes. Let's bring this land in. Let's try to bring it in with an idea that it'll be a complete community. People will have buildings and shops where they can go to work, walk to their homes, have a complete community, really take the pressure off of the road system so that they don't have to drive to Hillsboro for work and so on. And so I really urge you to support this, and I think now is the time to do it. At least take it to the next step and try to get some planning on it. Get some planning and give it the real respect that it deserves as being an expansion area. We're not going to go back to the chicken ranch at David Douglas High School, so let's try to plan this. And thank you very much. I believe I went along my time, but I'm passionate about it. So thank you.
Thank you. And Mary Kyle.
Good afternoon, Chair Clem and members of the committee. My name is Mary Kyle McCurdy, Policy Director at 1000 Friends of Oregon. We're opposed to House Bill 3211 because we believe it's unnecessary. I should clarify before making my comments that while 1000 Friends has been involved with the Metro Urban and Rural Reserve process, we have not been engaged in the appropriate designation of the Stafford Basin. So my testimony is not on whether or how much of the Stafford Basin should be urbanized or not urbanized, but it's rather on what the appropriate process should be. And we believe that is right where it is right now. On March 16th, LCDC, the Land Conservation and Development Commission, sent the Stafford Basin decision back to Metro and Clackamas County to address the issues that the Court of Appeals raised, that were raised by two of the cities in the Court of Appeals that concerned the ability or the planning for transportation in the Stafford Basin. The Stafford Basin, even if it is designated as an urban reserve, is not likely to come into the urban growth boundary anytime soon because of the challenging nature of planning for it. And just as an example, an area recently added to the metro urban growth boundary is the South Hillsborough area of about 1,000 or so acres. And there's probably been no area in the metro area that's come into the urban growth boundary that has been so thoroughly planned in advance. And still, as you'll see in the Oregonian article of yesterday, they are finding that it is extremely expensive to provide the infrastructure to that area, and there's a lot of it that's unfunded, including mostly for transportation. That exists in the Stafford Basin as well. Just even improving the 205 interchange is a huge lift. And you've heard testimony about how controversial this area is and whether or not the cities believe they can provide services to it. Again, we're not here to talk about whether that's an appropriate designation or not, but that there's a lot of planning that needs to be done, and there isn't a rush in this. We think the appropriate place to address this is right where it is, back with Metro and Clackamas County to figure out how to address these infrastructure and other planning needs in the Stafford Basin. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel? Questions? Vice Chair Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Ms. McCurdy, can you tell us again where in the process legally the remand is from the Court of Appeals?
Yes, and I don't know if there's anyone from DLCD here that might want to talk about it too. Rob is here, okay. So please step in and correct me, Rob. The Court of Appeals remanded the decision back to LCDC, and on March 16th, there were two properties remaining after House Bill 4078. Two issues remaining, one in Multnomah County concerning one piece of land, and then the Stafford Basin issue in Clackamas County. The Stafford Basin issue had been appealed by the cities of West Lynn and Tualatin. And the issue regarded whether or not there was evidence in the record to support the transportation infrastructure to support an urban designation. LCDC sent that back to Metro and Clackamas County on March 16th, and they just issued that order confirming it. Rob, is there anything you'd like to add? Okay. Is there any time frame? Okay. I think it looks like they're going to testify. Does that, Representative Helm, does that answer your question? I'm sorry, Chair Clem, Representative Helm.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. So let me go back here and pick up Rob Fallow, Roger Martin, and then Dan Chandler.
Mr. Chair.
Make sure everybody knows there are chairs to sit down in the back.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I'm a lobbyist, and I'm here representing the Borland Neighborhood Association. With me is Rob Fallow, who's the president of that group. I'd like to take a little time to give you some background, because I have to tell you, I was a member of the Oregon Legislature in 1973, occupying the seat directly in front of Representative McLean when Senate Bill 100 passed, followed by the law that allows this, allows Metro to do the planning, which was Senate Bill 769.
Tell us your name, though, first.
I'm Roger Martin.
There you go.
First of all, the Bolin area is a, and you have a map that I left in front of you. I borrowed it from a bicycle group, but it gives you an idea of what we're talking about. About 400 acres that is directly north of the Tualatin River and south of I-205.
It's other way around.
It's north of I-205 and south of the Tualatin River. This is an area that has been studied extensively, and contrary to what you've heard from several people about just let the system work as normal, the system doesn't work, and let me give you the background. I voted for Senate Bill 100 many years ago. I voted no on the other bill, which was an idea that emanated from the mayor of Portland, Neil Goldschmidt, who wanted the planning for the metropolitan area done by Metro and not by the LCDC or whatever was going to develop. He asked for that exception. And I objected, along with a lot of other legislators from the suburban counties of both parties, who said inevitably what that's going to set up is a conflict where the dominant county, Multnomah County, the city of Portland, is going to dominate the decision making. And I have to tell you, that's exactly what's happened over the years. The Bolin area we're talking about has two mega churches in it, two large schools in it. Representative Davis could give you the background because he grew up right there and went to both these schools. It's got a very nice little tavern. It has several dead Christmas tree farms where they might have been worthwhile if they had cut the trees 20 years ago. Now they're too big for even the Capitol Rotunda. What we're concerned about is the repeated...
away from you just a little bit, giving us some feedback.
What we're concerned about is the repeated promises from Metro that we're going to do something, and it hasn't happened. In the 1990s, a study was done of the whole area, including what the other part of we're talking about, the triangle, and it was recommended that something be done. Nothing came of that. In 2007, Metro had a bill going through, passed the House. We, the Bolin Neighborhood Association, stopped it over in the Senate, and with the help of Senator Alan Bates, and I talked to him this morning, and he remembers it, he says, is that problem still around? Yep, still around, hadn't been solved. We stopped it. Metro brought down their presiding officer, and then the Michael Jordan, who was the executive director at the time, apologized to the committee for the way they'd acted and promised that in the near future something would be done. That followed by a resolution or a motion by Metro Councilor at the time, Carl Hostica. That was going to be what was going to happen within the next couple of years. That's 2007. Within several weeks, that resolution went away and nothing happened. Now, we're not going to get a resolution to this until we ask you, this committee, using this bill, can you please finally bring a conclusion? Anybody that drove into the Bolin area will look at it and say it ought to be developed. We're not talking residential development now for the Bolin area. We're talking about a development similar to the Cruise Way, which is the western entrance to Lake Oswego. It's logical. The counties agree that it's logical. The people in the neighborhood association around us agree that the Bolin area ought to develop. But it's not going to develop, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, unless this committee does something about it. So we plead with you. Will you please do, make Metro do, or do it yourself, what they promised repeatedly over the last 20 years?
Thank you. Chair Clem and members of the committee. My name is Rob Fallow, and I'm president of the Bolin Neighborhood Association Board of Directors. We're here today to tell you of promises made and promises broken. We're here to tell of efforts of my fellow property owners and taxpayers in the Bolin neighborhood that have made year after year, to work within the system to try to determine what our future holds. Roger outlined some of the long history of Metro's broken promises to us. You've heard that Metro has been free with its promises to property owners, cities, counties, and yes, even to the legislature, and a history of not keeping those promises. One that Roger didn't mention that I'd like to point out is they even came in 1994 to one of the founding property families there and coerced them into selling about, I think it was about 16 acres along the Tualatin River for a park for the upcoming urban area that was going to go in there. They took the property, but they forgot about the rest of the promise to bring the area in. We Broadland owners have paid for a vision and a pre-concept plan by Leland Consulting, an international urban design firm that even metro planners have agreed is adequate for the rules to allow inclusion of the area into the UGB. A PDF copy of the plan has been emailed to Representative Clem. With determination, our neighborhood association has continued to work with our local cities to determine what would be the best vision for the area. Today, both Lake Oswego and Tualatin are calling for the area to be more like Cruiseway in design. We are open to this vision for Borland. We've had three large developers over the past 15 years that had an interest in assuming a role in this vision, planning, and development of our area based on the promises that Metro was going to be bringing it in. In each case, the uncertainty of Metro not acting as promised has driven them away. Now we've been told by a developer that when we're really in the UGB, come talk to us. Once again, we're stymied. We've been brought up to the gate and dropped. During the years of broken promises, several Borland owner property owners have passed away. They were unable to plan for orderly retirement or estate planning in ways that other property owners have been. Those of us still owning property in Borland are in limbo, unable to go forward with our own planning. As I said, we've tried to work with the system and within the system. We have been to countless meetings, watched areas not even considered prior to 2007 get included in the UGB, and here we sit. We sit not knowing whether to build or to plant. We have cities that say they want us and others that now is not the time. We think now is the time. We cannot trust Metro to back up its promises. We are asking the Oregon legislature to assure us reasonable property rights in a process that's not tied up in the courts for the next decade. Thank you very much.
And Dan. Good afternoon, Chair Clem, members of the committee. My name is Dan Chandler. I'm a strategic policy administrator for Clackamas County. I want to talk a little bit about how we got here. Let me first say Clackamas County is here to support the bill. We started the reserves process in 2008 with high hopes. It was a great thing. It's going to give us certainty, speed, less litigation, right? Those were the promises of the reserves process, so we leaned in hard. We had hundreds and hundreds of citizens show up. We had volunteers on policy advisory committees, on technical advisory committees, advising the policy advisory committees. We had a planning commission, the Board of County Commissioners, a regional reserves steering committee, a Core 4, the Metro Council, three planning commissions from three counties, three boards of county commissioners, all weighed in. We did the local process. We did it in good faith. We worked hard. Clackamas County pulled people back from retirement to work on the process. In February of 2010, more than 5 years ago, we adopted an IGA with Metro that said these will be the urban reserves and these will be the rural reserves. We waited 2.5 years to complete the LCDC review of the local decision. 2.5 years with no changes in Clackamas County. We waited another 1.5 years for the Court of Appeals to issue its ruling a little over a year ago, and then it's taken over another year to work out the details of the remand order from LCDC back to the local governments, which you heard just happened earlier this month. So we're 5 years in, 7 years from where we started, and where are we? I think last week someone used the term limbo. We'd use the term appellate purgatory, not to get into fine theological divisions about innocence or not, but we think we're in purgatory. And the status now is that there are no reserves, there are no acknowledged reserves in Clackamas County. It's not just one property. Metro has said there are no acknowledged reserves. What that means is that over almost 14,000 acres of the total regional land supply of reserves is unavailable. We can't draw from it for an urban growth boundary amendment. no urban reserves in Clackamas County. 60% of the total supply remains in purgatory. The city of Wilsonville is now stymied. Fast-growing city, they're providing jobs, they're providing housing, they're a model for how to come out of the recession. They are stopped in their tracks because there are no reserves for Metro to draw from to bring Wilsonville into the boundary. The only reason there are any reserves at all, as you well know, is because the legislature acted last year. We can't begin to have a discussion in Clackamas County about where we're going to provide jobs. How are we going to come out of the recession? Because, again, there are no reserves to draw from. I think if we stay on the path we're on, at best, local efforts and the normal appeal process, it's reasonable to think it will take at least another 3 years. I don't think that's an exaggeration. That's a pretty reasonable approximation, which will mean it'll be 10 years from the start of this process before we have the next answer, which itself might be appealed. We don't see any end in sight unless the legislature can come forward here and bring some finality. You may hear this bill is unnecessary because the parties are talking. Clackamas County requested that the appellant cities and Metro enter into mediation with us 7 weeks ago. We've not gotten a response from the cities. We don't have high hopes. There have been some discussions at the staff level, but we haven't gotten a formal response to that request. And again, even if that happens at the local level, it's a local decision that can be appealed that will run us into at least 3 more years. And the problem is here, planning is going to take a lot of time, but no one's going to invest in planning until we have some certainty. It's not like this bill is going to happen and houses are going to go up next year. Cities, willing cities, have to annex. They've got to provide services. And people have got to plan. People have got to solve problems. There are transportation problems to be solved. But nobody wants to invest or is going to be willing to invest in solving those problems until we have certainty. Clackamas County is just asking me to give that. We don't have a position on any particular configuration of land in Stafford. We support the bill as drafted. Our board voted on that this morning. In part, again, that's because the cities are going to decide what happens. We'd be willing to talk. We just want this done. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Bailey.
Quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarification, Metro's on the record as saying since the LCDC remand that they will work closely with counties. Do you have any indication of that? I suspect you don't, but I just want to be sure they haven't offered or there's some opportunity for working with them immediately.
We've certainly talked at the managerial level. The county and Metro have talked, and we've talked at the sort of administrative level to some of the city folks, but we do not have, again, it's been over 7 weeks now, 8 weeks now, we don't have a formal response to our formal request to enter into mediation. Again, the problem with that is anything we do at the local level, I think it's a fair bet somebody will be unhappy with it and they will appeal it. And then we're back into this 3 to 5 year appellate purgatory. Even if we were all meeting today to work it out at the local level, the region, the property owners, everybody's still caught in that uncertainty. The only way to bring it to an end, obviously, is if the legislature acts. Thank you,
Chair. Quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. When you said the board voted, you did, by that this morning, you didn't mean the commission? Which board are you?
Yes, I meant the Board of County Commissioners of Clackamas County.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, could I add to that? Last week, in testimony, the Metro representative testified to this committee that we don't need any of the area in Clackamas County. We have plenty of area in Portland, which illustrates the point I've made. Property owners are ignored in this whole process. It's all about a government process of what's best for Metro, not citizens.
Thank you for that. Okay, thanks.
And then Bob, come on up. Is there anybody that I've missed? I don't believe so. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bob Rindy, legislative coordinator with the Department of Land Conservation Development. And I'm primarily here today to make sure that if you have questions about the mechanics of this remand, we can try to respond. My colleague Rob Halliburton here as well, who is much more familiar with the gory details of this review, in case I get stuck on that. We have not taken a position on this bill. We did send in testimony that I hope you have. The department, of course, has consistently testified in the legislature that urban growth boundary and related urban reserve and rural reserve decisions are at their heart, their local decisions. And one of the reasons for that is there are a myriad of parties, and in the case of Metro, 28 local governments, that are involved in these decisions. It's really difficult to get all of the opinions here that you will hear. When you acted on 4078 last session, there followed to us many, many, many complaints about folks who felt that they had been excluded because the legislature had acted, even though we agree with you that in that particular bill there was a very high degree of concurrence. We don't think you have that necessarily today with regard to Clackamas County urban reserves. We wanted to clarify that, yes, LCDC did remand this actually in November, and then at the request of local governments, we returned in March and modified the wording of that remand order and just recently remanded it. LCDC asked that the county return in October in responding to the remand. That is, as I think their testimony to us was, that's something as a starting point they would certainly try to do that, but it is not a deadline. There is no deadline for how long this remand might take. Indeed, the requirement in law for urban and rural reserves doesn't require that Metro and the counties ever adopt urban reserves. They have it's an authorization that they have agreed to try to do. So that's the main points we wanted to make on this, and certainly be available if you have questions about the bill that we think are in our purview. Thank you.
Any questions for the department?
I didn't quite hear. Are you saying, you know, Clackamas just testified that even though it's a lawful and legal designation for rural reserves, and they want to have that tool, are you saying that it's not mandated that you do that, or that Metro does that, so this thing could just habitually continue without resolution?
Mr. Chair, Representative McLean, I'll try to clarify what I said is that the legislature didn't absolutely require that Metro and the counties designate urban reserves, and these are urban reserves. I think there was some testimony earlier today that seemed to suggest this was urban growth boundaries, and we've had that confusion. But this is the long-term supply for urbanization that Metro and the counties have agreed. They agreed and sent to LCDC a plan for having this as urban reserve. That was at their discretion. If they had chosen to not designate urban reserves, our understanding is that would have been allowed under law as well. And I said that in reference to the deadline question that you had asked earlier. We've remanded this. LCDC recently in the clarified remand was issued on the 16th of March. That remand doesn't have a deadline to it. As part of that remand in the hearing, LCDC requested that it be returned by October. But I think that's with an understanding that I don't think there was a way for LCDC to mandate a return date. We hope that it will be resolved quickly. The issues that the court raised are about findings for planning for transportation, and they didn't get to them, but it exposes planning for other public facilities. You've heard testimony today, a lot of concern about whether that can be resolved quickly, whether that the county and Metro would be able to act on that quickly. I think theoretically, from a standpoint of the technical work, it can be reasonably resolved by October. But as you know, these these things are often fraught with controversy, and there will be a lot of testimony. So in the end, the bottom line is there is no absolute mandated date for Clackamas County and Metro to adopt urban reserves. We think their intent is that, and I believe Metro has made it clear that they intend to try to resolve the issues and thus to have an acknowledged urban reserve, and it's our understanding that the county as well is working toward that.
If Metro chooses not to adopt urban reserves, has Metro not vetoed, in essence, your ability to implement?
Mr. Chair, Representative McLean, it's not that LCDC has an authority to actually act here in any other way than to approve what Metro and the county do by way of agreement. That's the way the urban reserve statutes work. So they would concur and adopt the urban reserves so we have remanded their previous adoption of those. The courts remanded those, and we acted to us, and we acted and remanded it to Metro and the county. If they do that, then it will come back to LCDC for acknowledgement that it meets the law. But LCDC doesn't have any authority to act. If Metro or the county chooses in the end to simply not proceed and adopt urban reserves, it's our understanding that they can do that. I think that would have a lot of effects that the local governments don't want to have happen, and you probably heard some of that flavor today. But in the end, if that's your question, there is not anything we can do to force the adoption of these reserves.
Quick question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gilliam.
I want to be sure I understand. I realize you have a different role. The department has a different role. But your observation is that they are, these parties, Metro and the county and other parties, are working together and are moving toward some resolution. Is that what I heard?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, that's our understanding, that they have worked on this. Now, as you just heard, the final order, the second order remand was just issued about a week ago. I don't think I can characterize whether anything has changed. All along, there has been a mutual desire for the county and for Metro to get to a conclusion on designation of urban reserves. I don't know that we have any signal that right now, in response to this, that has stopped. I believe those governments are still committed to trying to get to the end of this and to get over this last hump with regard to the findings on transportation and other facilities that the court identified.
Done.
Okay, thanks, Bob. With that, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3211 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3282. Purpose of at least taking our Senate colleagues and our one House member who have joined us. Why don't you join us, please? Senator Buehler, would you like to start?
Yes, thank you, Chair Clem and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Representative Newt Buehler from House District 54, which is mostly the city of Bend, not all of it. And I appreciate you having me here today and hearing House Bill 3282. UGB expansions, as you know, are incredibly complex. I don't have to tell this committee that. Time-consuming and many times expensive processes. They rely on a tremendous amount of analysis and take many years and oftentimes millions of dollars to complete, and certainly the city of Bend understands that as much as any city right now. And due to these high hurdles, many cities that are experiencing rapid population growth, such as Bend, are unable to expand to meet the demands of the market, specifically with regards to land. And there's a lot of shortage of affordable housing because of it. The intent and really the core of House Bill 3282 is to streamline this process in a small way and make it simpler. And hopefully this will result in more balanced outcomes and smarter growth, not only for Bend, but for cities across Oregon. Now, currently, cities submit all elements of their UGB expansion at the same time. It's all in or nothing. And there are many distinct pieces and projections within each of these submissions. And if there's a problem with just one of these projections or pieces of the application, the entire application will need to be redone from scratch, again, costing considerable amount of time and resources each time. This bill would really allow cities to know that they're on the right track throughout the whole process, meaning that these calculations and analysis of future needs are interdependent, and if you make a mistake in the beginning, it could invalidate much of the application. House Bill 3282 allows cities to work sequentially through this process and will ensure that they get each piece of the application right before moving onto the next and spending many dollars and time in doing so. Now, the city of Bend has invested millions of dollars right now in its current UGB expansion and has been at it for more than a decade of their UGB process. Its current process has received glowing praise from DLCD, and if you look in OLIS, you'll see an attached document outlining that, and has strong support within the community. That being said, the lack of UGB expansion to meet the incoming demand has led to severe shortage of developable land. This lack of land has contributed in part to Bend's lack of affordable housing and, I would say, unmatched vacancy rate, right now estimated to be about 0.25%, 0.25% of vacancy in the city of Bend right now. It's causing enormous problems, not only attracting workers, but even at our local homeless shelter. Now, the intent behind House Bill 3282 is to make this complex process simpler and actually more transparent. A more efficient process will help stimulate healthy, well-planned communities around the state, especially in rural areas, which have a particularly difficult time complying with our land use laws for a variety of reasons. House Bill 3282 would increase Bend's chances of navigating this process successfully and provide a valuable option for cities around the state considering their own needs. I urge you to support House Bill 3282, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Lee Beyer, State Senator representing Central Linn and Lane counties, and forgive my voice, the blossoms and other things are getting to me. So I'm going to say I think I'm allergic to Oregon, but I'm going to live here anyway, a long time. I've been involved in land use as a planning commissioner, a city councilor, or on the development side for over 25 years, and probably in my community I've been involved with the original comp plan from Senate Bill 100, a couple amendments to that, and a couple of UGB expansions. So I think I have a good sense of how the thing works. The thing that has bothered me a lot, and I've been working on since I came back to the legislature in 2011, was trying to not kind of make the land use system weaker, but in fact strengthen it and make it something that cities can afford to do. And I think about that before I was back here in 2007, the legislature changed the law for the Eugene-Springfield area to allow them to do an expedited separation and expansion of the UGB in the metro area, an expedited application. That expedited application is still in progress and hasn't been completed yet on either side of I-5. So expedited is an interesting word. And both cities have spent well over $1 million trying to unravel that. And I think that's an issue. I mean, if you think about what a city could do with $1 million, it's not about not doing good land use planning. It's about doing it efficiently and effectively. I think this bill is a logical step at expediting, not necessarily even expediting the process, but adding some logic to it. What I've observed over the years is cities argue about the packages and go through the whole thing only to have it thrown out at the end or challenged at the end on maybe the first step. What makes more sense to me is not necessarily to change the steps. The steps are logical. You know, it's logical that the first step is you do an inventory of what land you've got designated for different uses. That makes sense. It's logical that the next one would be to take a look at the opportunities and the needs. It's logical that you would then, if you found you needed more land, you would do a review of the options. And then it's logical that you would make an application for the expansion after you've done all of that. But what makes more sense and more predictability is if you were able to submit after each step and get LCDC approval on that. And I would suggest, it's not in the bill, but I would suggest another logical thing is just like there's a timeline for challenging, if you allowed a challenge at each of those steps, but had the timeline, so once it was approved and it wasn't challenged or if it went through the courts, you were done, then you could move on to the next logical step. I think that would clarify the process not only for city planning commissions and city councils, but also for the public. They would know what they were talking about and wouldn't get confused in a 5 to 10 year process and they're sort of like, okay, now what happened back here? That's proven not to work really well. It makes sense that you take it a piece at a time, and that's what this bill does. I think it makes good sense, and I would encourage you to adopt the bill.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16, Northwest Oregon. I'm here less about the specifics of the bill, but more using this bill as a target of opportunity with an increasingly urgent message that I think we need to make our land use processes more streamlined, expeditious, and less expensive. We need to get to yes or to no quickly. And either outcome is fine, but time is not the friend of many of the developers that are looking at siting. Let me start by saying that I associate myself with the benefits of a thoughtful land use planning process, but I think that we are risking, and I mean seriously risking, the possibility of more radical adjustments to our land use system by way of ballot measures if we, the legislature, don't take some leadership in resolving some of the outstanding problems. Representative Witt knows well the situation that we have had in Scappoose. For 2 decades, there was a private sector fight about preserving 420 acres for the industrial growth, the future of Scappoose. This dialogue, this litigious, expensive, protracted, acrimonious debate over the future of the 420 acres finally resolved, and I would just say for the general edification, certainly of some of our new colleagues, it was resolved through an Oregon Solutions process, and then we attempted to try to bring the property into the UGB for the beneficial use that all of us had seen possible for Scappoose, that is bounded on one side by the Coast Range, basically, and on the other side by the Columbia River. This began a 5-year odyssey with the clock still ticking, no resolution, and the cash registers of various and sundry lawyers, and I know there are lawyers on this panel, I say this respectfully, cash registers of lawyers ringing like church bells. We have been through a rigorous city process. We have been through a rigorous county process. We have been to DLCD. I'd have to turn around and ask Mr. Rindy twice or 3 times, I can't remember which, twice. We have been to a vote of the people on appeal where the inclusion prevailed. It has been appeal after appeal by an individual who didn't live in the city, and now we are still embroiled in a two-year wait at the Court of Appeals, once again challenged by the same individual who now no longer even lives in the county. Absent any predictability, our developer, who is a high-quality, well-known, responsible Oregon developer, is losing patience. He's already spent millions of dollars. We also are stalled on the very real possibility of a bricks and mortar facility for PCC as part of the magnificent bond that they passed. But PCC has hesitated to move ahead while we are embroiled in the litigation at the Court of Appeals. Opportunity has been lost. Our community is frustrated. And my deep concern is that this scenario, maybe not quite as egregious as ours, but this scenario plays itself out over and over and over again throughout Oregon. And I think that we invite radical challenge to a land use process that many of us have thought had value as long as there are these anomalous situations that stifle growth, frustrate developers, and make us appear to have the don't come here sign out for other businesses that are looking to Oregon to establish roots. Thank you very much.
Questions for our colleagues? Vice Chair Hunt.
Thank you all for coming today. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, I know this applies to Bend, but are there communities in your districts that would be benefiting immediately by the bill that we're talking about today?
In my case, I'm not sure that there are any that would benefit immediately. I don't think Brownsville's got one under the control of Harrisburg. I don't think so. I think the Eugene and Springfield areas are already well into the process. Harrisburg, I think, has just completed theirs. They've just completed it, so probably not in immediate future.
I would actually, Betsy Johnson, I would have to go back and compare the record for Scappoose against the details of this bill. My purpose in being here today was more just the clarion call that we need to do something to take a serious look at our land use system before somebody writes an initiative at a kitchen table and takes the whole thing apart at the ballot box.
I have a question.
Vice Chair Post.
I think Representative Bueller would probably be the best, maybe, to answer this. The thought that I had as I was reading through this, whether this is good or bad, I don't even know. Would this sequential UGB process, is there a possibility it would make applications appeal-proof?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. But I think an answer is just a more rational approach to it, basically in, for example, answering a question first, you know, why do you need the land? Because if you can't even answer that question, why even proceed on? And then if the answer is yes, then move on to how, which, you know, takes even more resources. So I think it would circumvent, you know, a city from, if they can't answer the why question appropriately, not spending years and millions of dollars of answering the how question, I guess is a good way to explain it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Post, if I can pile on here a little bit. I think if the bill was changed so that appeals, if there were going to be one, had to happen at each stage, you probably, over time, would make it more predictable and would limit the time limit that you have. You still, everybody who had an interest would still have the opportunity to appeal the decision, but you don't get to the end and then have to start all over again.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You're safe. We're trying to figure. I see Representative Johnson out in the hall, but I'm not sure it's scheduled. Okay. I've got both of them here at one time, so let me close House Bill 3282 for the moment. Open a public hearing on House Bill
Mr. Chair, while they're coming up, did Senator Johnson blame Representative Witt for the Scappoose mess? Because he left
in kind of an uproar.
Yeah, I don't know.
He was over at the social gathering in Rainier, I believe, during the whole mess. Welcome. Tell us about 3368.
There you go.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Good to see you all again. Have I been in front of this committee before?
Not yet.
Oh, you're looking great. Good bunch. I'm glad you have your wayward one back after his little episode. So he's on the mend, so that's a good thing. For the record, I'm Mark Johnson. I'm the state representative from Hood River, and I live in, we're House District 52, and I live in Hood River. This bill is based on an issue that was brought to my attention and my good senators here as well by our county planner in Hood River County, who is concerned that the statute that currently governs the ability of home businesses to host weddings could be interpreted to require the weddings to actually take place inside of a structure or inside of a dwelling rather than allow them to happen outside. So that's why it's just a very narrowly tailored bill or targeted bill to, if you look down at line 17, I believe is the key phrase in the bill. It says, in an outdoor setting on the lot or parcel on which the dwelling is located. So that's the only net change in the statute. It's intended to be very narrowly interpreted and targeted. But just a little bit of background, I'm sure that Chair Clem and others in the committee are aware of and appreciative for the economic benefit of the wedding industry in our state. Obviously, Oregon's a great place to live, but it's a great place because of our lifestyle, because of our livability, because we have mountains and streams and forests and all those type of things that make wonderful backdrops and settings for weddings to take place. And in Hood River County, the wedding industry or business is an incredible contributor to our economic vitality. In the last, I'm going to say, 20 years, well, probably 15 years, it's been an incredibly fast-growing industry, and I think is one of the reasons why Hood River County has the lowest unemployment rate in the state of Oregon right now. It gives us another leg on our economic stool that helps us to provide vitality and variety and sustainability to our economy so that we aren't as dependent upon fruit. We're not really dependent on timber anymore, but fruit and ag interests and our tech industry. So that's the intent. It's just intended to be very narrowly structured to ensure that weddings can happen in an outdoor venue. But it's important that, you know, our planner in Hood River and our Hood River County has interpreted the statute to that effect. But as you well know, other planners in other counties could have different interpretations. So that's the intent here, to try to have the statute be clear that weddings can take place inside or outside as the parties would like to have. So with that, I'll turn over to my senator.
Good afternoon. Chuck Thompson, Senate District 26, also live in Hood River. And a few of you, at least on the committee, Mr. Chair, and co-chairs and members of the committee. I never remember to do that. But many of us were on, 4 years ago when I came here, we worked on the farm activities bill that was generated by AOC, and many of you older members were probably worked on that. Can you hear me, Mr. Rep. Gilliam? Thank you. I need to turn this up. But anyway, quite a few others worked on that also, and I don't think it was the intent that you couldn't have wedding activities outside. And how long has these statutes and that been in effect? At least 4 years now, I believe. And it was never really an issue. And now there's just, as more people kind of get into this, the wedding industry and going to get conditional uses and that part of the thing, other people have looked at this bill and kind of tried to tweak it to the point to where some people that are in the business are afraid they aren't going to be able to hold these activities outside. So that's the reason for the small little tweak to the bill. I don't think it has any other big concerns.
Nefarious intent?
Yeah.
No.
None of that at all. So I'm just here with Rep. Johnson to give her support and hope you support the small little change. Thank you.
It's my understanding as well that AOC, I think, will testify on behalf of the bill they support, and I believe our county planner is here too, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Any questions for our colleague? Vice Chair Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming, and you truly do preside over one of the most beautiful parts of our state. And if my daughter ever gets married, she swears she'll have her wedding at the Mount Hood B&B on Cooper Spur Road.
Yeah, so gorgeous.
Got that
it
going
is a great
for
spot.
Us. Yeah. I just want to make sure that I have your intent clear. I think you've been fairly clear. As a hearings officer, I've applied several times the new statute about hosting events on farmland. Mm-hmm. And this issue has come up in that context, too. And I want to make sure if we're going to amend a statute, we're amending the right one. And I realize that some of these home occupations in the past, some of the older ones, could have been potentially approved under this statute, but newer ones, of course, would probably be forced to be approved under the new event statute. Is it your experience that the new statute is having trouble? The event statute is the one that's the problem, or is it the older one?
I'm not sure.
Or is there a clear distinction between the two? Because I'd like to.
Representative Helm, I would say that I think this language here would hearken prior to 2011 as regarding the home business and so forth. I don't think that fits under the or would be governed by the new statutes we passed in 2011 on EFU land and so forth and so on in the farm practice zone, what's acceptable and what's not. So I'm guessing it's the older statute, but hopefully the planning folks behind us can answer that question more clearly.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Any further questions? Representative Gombert.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just feel compelled to remind the Vice Chair that should his daughter look for some other options besides wonderful Hood River, that the Central Coast is a wonderful and fine place to get married.
She can probably find a good deal on kites, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking through this bill, I'm a little bit bemused to see a number of changes where the county designate has been changed to the county designee. Do I need to stay up tonight late trying to discern the difference between the designate and the designee? Or?
Representative, I think that's just LC updating the language in the most culturally competent at the moment.
I'll sleep better. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to go back to the sequential issue in the city of Bend, and then we'll come back to this in a moment. Let me close the public hearing on House Bill 3368, reopen the public hearing on House Bill 3282, ask Eric Cancellor Damian Siernick and Doug Knight to come up.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, Eric Cancellor, representing the City of Bend. I want to thank you for having a hearing on this bill and giving us the opportunity to address our desire to pursue sequential needs approval analysis in UGB expansions. I'd like to also thank Representative Bueller as well as Senators Beyer and Johnson for their support of this legislation. I have here with me today Bend Senior Long Range Planner Damian Siernick and City Councilor Doug Knight. I'm going to start by offering a little context on why this, why now. Damian is going to present a little bit more of a technical view on how the proposal would work, why it would matter from our perspective, but then Councilor Knight is going to speak to Ben's process, the dire nature of our land needs, and offer some additional perspective on the matter as well. So I should also point out that this bill, as introduced, is simply the drafter's interpretation of the intent. And we've had a number of conversations with DLCD, with Thousand Friends. At this point, I don't know if we'll be able to find agreement on the bill. We're certainly interested in working on that. And so there's certainly an opportunity to work on the language to, if there's something to do jointly, to get together and do that. We're certainly not wed to the introduced language. So as to why this, why now? This body, and in fact this committee, has heard a number of different urban growth boundary expansion and growth management related decisions. In 2013, of course, you passed House Bill 2254, which created a new alternative track for urban growth boundary expansions in the state. It's a track that's still under development in the rulemaking process at DLCD. It's a track that a lot of work went into, a lot of hard work, a lot of good work, and one that we hope is a very promising path for the future that's available for cities around the state soon. In 2014, you passed legislation relating to the urban and rural reserve process, buttoning that down to a degree in Washington County, and you are being asked to address similar issues in Clackamas County right now. Your efforts last session were pretty remarkable and much needed. There is a gap here, though. If you look outside of the metro area, you'll find a lot of cities whose needs haven't been addressed and, frankly, aren't likely to be addressed by the new track, the alternative track, via House Bill 2254 that's still in the works. These are cities that haven't expanded their UGBs in a long time. They're cities that have experienced tremendous growth. They're cities that have a variety of complex issues that they're dealing with at the local levels. 2254, as I understand it, as most folks understand it as I talk to them, it has a simple intent of offering a very clear, a very moderate path forward for cities that already have rather up-to-date inventories, land inventories within their urban growth boundaries. What we're dealing with in Ben's case and in a handful of other cases around the state are cities that need to do pretty significant catch-up. And 2254, in its modesty, isn't really helpful in that regard. Assuming that it works as promised, it would help prevent us from falling further behind, essentially, but doesn't provide a mechanism for catching us up. So we find ourselves really with little choice but to remain committed to the current track, the current UGB expansion track, and we find ourselves committed to seeking opportunities to make that track easier and simpler. As you've heard, Ben's more than 10 years into its process, millions of dollars invested. We've executed a very publicly involved, very effective, frankly, very conservative process for addressing our future needs. But despite all of that work, there's absolutely, and despite all of DLCD's hard work in helping us to process this effectively, there's absolutely no guarantee that a single appellant, and I should point out the first time around, Ben's in a remand process. I believe we had 32 individual appellants. So appeals can come from far and wide. One appellant challenging one component of our package could send the whole thing tumbling down, much as a house of cards might do. So what we're asking very simply is to allow a procedural change, an option for cities to pursue, to do their needs analysis first, to do sequential approval, to get that figured out and acknowledged before we look at how to expand our boundary. We think that it will provide us with a more logical path forward. And we're asking for your support in giving the cities this option. So now I'll turn it over to Damian, who can talk more about this from a practitioner's perspective.
All right, thank you, Rick. Good afternoon, Chair Clem, members of the committee. I'm going to try to not be too close to the microphone to cause feedback, so forgive me if I do a lot of looking up and down as I'm giving my testimony. As Eric mentioned, my name is Damian Cernick. I'm a senior long-range planner for the City of Bend's Growth Management Department, and my section of our presentation today will focus on the nuts and bolts and the how House Bill 3282 is intended to work. This bill proposes changes to the text of 197-296, or as Chapter 197-626, regarding UGB amendments that are submitted to the Commission, LCDC, for review. So this would capture proposals from cities that are over 2,500 in population and where they're proposing a UGB amendment of more than 50 acres. Representative Bueller touched on some of the mechanics in his remarks. What I'll try to do is not repeat those, but also elaborate on a couple of points. Currently, as in Ben's case, when we're developing a proposal for a UGB amendment, we submit the entire package to the Department of Land Conservation and Development at once. And this includes the updated comprehensive plan, zoning code, inventories of buildable land, including those for both housing and employment, the need analysis that goes behind looking at future trends and how we satisfy those needs in the boundary. The estimate of capacity, about how much land we've got left in the boundary to meet those needs, and then the actual analysis decisions that go into addressing the land need. And that's usually in the form of some combination of changes in zoning inside the boundary and additions to the boundary through UGB amendment. And as you've heard, you know, one of the things that could happen with that kind of a proposal is you could do your best work and find there are two or three standards of law that you haven't satisfied, and that might necessitate a remand. What we're trying to do with 3282 is propose changes to the statute that would allow the sequencing, or even as little as a two-part sequence through which a city could obtain acknowledgement from the department of work products related to what I'm going to call land need. These include your inventory of land. Depending on whether you're looking at land for housing or employment, there's a subsequent analysis of either needed housing or economic opportunities. And then use that first set of work products to establish how much land is left in the boundary, how much you need to be satisfied, and then after doing some additional work on things that are called efficiency measures, looking at changes to your code or your zoning map to maybe accommodate a little bit more of that in the boundary. That would allow a local government to settle the question of need first. And if it was not remanded, get that acknowledged, so that when you begin the second part of your work on a boundary in terms of looking at how to respond to the need, the issue of need is already settled. You could then focus on how you might accommodate that through changes in zoning, changes your development code to use land more efficiently, and through an urban growth boundary expansion. So I will limit up my remarks today on the mechanics. I could go on and on about that, but we've got other people who are to testify, so I'll now turn it over to Councilor Knight, then take any questions after our presentation.
Mr. Chair and representatives of the community, I am Councilor Douglas Knight, having been elected to the Bend City Council in November of 2012. What I'd like to speak to this afternoon regards certainty, clarity, and amelioration of risk, and that is certainly what will be accomplished with House Bill 3282. I would like to make a metaphor, if you will, regarding my previous career as a city engineer and private engineer, having been the engineer of record for the Bend Library as well as other schools within the Bend area. And these were incredibly complex projects that I undertook that had a certain timeline, a certain process by which they are reviewed. Typically, we go through plan review, where we discuss options related to ADA compatibility, for example, or it might be specifics regarded to the life safety of the building. And we get assurances from the plan review department that our design is in compliance with these criteria. And with that assurance, we're then able to transition from the design phase of projects into construction. And even construction has certain procedural requirements as we step through from the beginning of construction all the way through completion, where we might have a review, for example, of your foundation design and even rebar within the foundation. And the reason that we have that is so that when it comes time to finally get a certificate of occupancy and commission the building, we're not called to the mat understanding that we had a faulty foundation or that we didn't properly accommodate handicap accessibility and that we've got to start over, that we've got to move walls, that we've got to, in essence, create a new project from the ground up. And that's the equivalent of what 3282 would create for the land use process with regard to UGB expansion. With this sequential approval, we have an amelioration of risk. We have a clarity. We have certainty in knowing as we move through the incremental process in a very complex scenario that we are assured that we will have completion that's a success to all. So I guess what I want to say most is that this will strengthen the position of the DLCD, and that this is an improvement to our land use UGB process. And it's an urgency in Bend that we all feel. Without this, Representative Bueller is correct. We have less than one quarter of 1% vacancy of rental property within the city of Bend. And that's primarily because we continue to build single-family homes at the demand of the market that is separate of an updated UGB. And we continue, as Representative Buehler illustrated, after decades of intense effort to not have a clear plan moving forward. And it's costing our community in the form of this affordable housing. So, again, certain navigation is important when it comes to complex projects, whether they be engineering or land use approval process. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Questions for these three? Vice Chair Helm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask the same question of you three. And I realize that there are a few communities in our state right now that are sort of what I think of as in the pipeline for doing their UGB work as we await the new streamlined UGB rules. Can you give me an idea what you think the other communities in the state might be that are also in the pipeline types?
Chair Clem, Vice Chair Helm, it is a good question, and it's important to quantify what we're really talking about here. And of course, I can't speak directly for any other city, but I have had conversations with folks at other cities. Scappoose, so the cities that would come to mind as potential candidates would be Scappoose, McMinnville, Newburgh, Woodburn, Bend, and Springfield. And there's sort of a twist to this that's emerged in the conversations that we've been having the past couple of days. One of the things that I've been talking to the cities about is whether or not they're able to do these things under periodic review. And I imagine that this was on your mind as well. So we've had conversations, again, with the agency. And quite frankly, it's not clear to us that we can do this under periodic review. But and from our impression, while it might be possible to sequence your needs through that, there's no guarantee, there's no certainty that it'll look like what you want it to look like going into the process. So as a result of we had a conversation this morning, that was very helpful on this matter. And one of the things we're doing is talking with the department to determine whether or not we can do this, because it hasn't been clear to anybody that I've talked to thus far that we can. But if it does turn out that it is possible, and again, we don't know, then that would be kind of a breakthrough. And so that's a conversation we're having at this point.
Follow up detection. Yeah, although I want to bring the department up to answer that too, and they're the last person on the list. Go ahead and follow up.
And if I may, I'd just like to add briefly to my testimony, if that's okay. I wanted to just call to your attention the last paragraph of the letter submitted in your packet, written by the manager of Bend to Mr. Eric King, and it says House Bill 3282 allows a community going through the UGB process to first establish land need and settle this matter before proceeding to the process of deciding how to address this need. And more importantly, this allows the city to proceed in a manner that involves fewer steps than the periodic review process. Finally, it provides an opportunity to settle land need before proceeding to complete the work necessary to address the need. So just to round out there. Thank you.
Just quickly, you mentioned that you might be amenable to amending this bill to more closely address the problem. Do you think we could do that in a way, if this were to move forward, that only addresses the needs of those communities? In other words, I think the bill is problematic at this point because it's too broad. We have a new process that is supposed to be working and more streamlined, and to allow cities to use part of an old process that they think for some reason better suits their objective rather than going to the new system is problematic. And I would like to confine the number of communities that might use this approach from the outset.
Chair Clem, Vice Chair Helm. I'm not exactly sure off the top of my head how we would do that, but we can certainly talk about that.
And I know you can't speak for those cities.
Right, and I won't reiterate that. From our perspective as well, although we're very hopeful that the 2254 path pans out as advertised and is available to cities soon. One way to look at it would be that if Bend is able to catch up on its current inventory, then it would be able to honestly assess 2254 as an alternative. However, in passing 2254, and you might get varying accounts of this, from our perspective, it wasn't necessarily meant to be a replacement for the current track. That might be the hope. There might be a natural evolution. But I think it was intended to be an alternative, a more modest alternative, a one that cities could go back at every 5 years with a lot of safe harbors. And once they're updated, they could be very expeditious about doing that. But I do think that we should be mindful that there may be cases going forward that that track is less appropriate for if you have maybe regional needs for industrial land supply that don't track as easily with population or linear economic projections. So I think that I would be hesitant, frankly, to hem that in too quickly. But if we want it to be more pointed, then that's a conversation worth having, and I'd be happy to talk with you about that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I'm going to excuse you three and have Mary Kyle and Bob Rindy come up so we can at least finish one bill from today's agenda. I think we're going to carry over, 2894 again, so we can try and get through our last couple bills. Go ahead, please.
Chair Clem, do you have a preference? Does it make more sense who you'd like to hear
first.
From first? Okay. Mary Kyle McCurdy, Policy Director for 1000 Friends of Oregon. Good afternoon, Chair Clem and members of the committee. We're here in opposition to House Bill 3282 because we believe it's not necessary for two reasons, which I will go into in a moment, but I want to respond a bit to some of the things that you've heard already. First, the nature of appealing local urban growth boundary decisions. These are not anonymous entities that are appealing these. These are controversial decisions because people care about where they live and work, and those are mostly local people appealing decisions, and they're kind of messy and they take time, but that's kind of democracy in a way. We were not involved in the Bend urban growth boundary decision or the Scappoose, and the Eugene and Springfield are both at the local level. They're not in an appellate fashion. We are actually working very positively with both those cities in Eugene and Springfield, and if Senator Beyer was here, I think he'd agree, to try to get those resolved and actually in a way that does not warrant an appeal and allows development, including industrial land in Springfield, which is part of what they're trying to do. And we're not involved in the appeal of Scappoose. And we weren't involved in the Bend urban growth boundary. And in fact, we're working with the city on remand, and we look forward to working on those affordable housing issues in particular, including zoning land inside the city of Bend to require more multifamily housing, which is something that's lacking now, to address the affordability issue. But the Bend urban growth boundary, as you heard, was appealed by about 30 different entities, many of whom were those who own land in and around the urban growth boundary who wanted in or out. You know, those are local discussions that are hard to have, and there's not a lot of agreement. But those sometimes take time to work out. But we can make the whole process more streamlined, and that is what House Bill 2254 does and what the LCDC is engaged in rulemaking in that now with a very broad advisory committee that includes lots of cities. There's research being done by the University of Oregon, and that will result in a streamlined method that's more formulaic, that will take away a lot of the grounds on which people can vary over population projections, the amount of land that's needed, and that is available to every city. There's nothing modest about House Bill 2254. I want to correct that impression that might have been given. It's available to any city, regardless of how long it's been since they've updated their urban growth boundary. Our local land use planning program is still faster than our neighboring states, for all that it's messy at times. And I think that there's also a double-edged sword to the sequential urban growth boundary process that you've heard. I'll back up a little bit. Several, maybe many years ago, this issue came up in an advisory committee on Goal 14 that LCDC had, and we looked at whether or not to do a more multi-part sequential urban growth boundary expansion. 1,000 Friends actually thought that there was some merit in that. There was a problem that the cities could not agree on it because the double-edged nature of it is that if you take up each individual item that a city needs to do and should do in determining whether or not it needs an urban growth boundary expansion, like does it need more land for industrial use or for residential use, if those are each taken up individually and potentially appealed or brought to LCDC, that can take longer than doing it in one fell swoop with one decision at the end. And anyone who appeals a decision has to have brought up the issues that concern them in the process, so there's no surprise at the end. So I think there's a double-edged sword there. So the two reasons we believe this bill is not necessary are, one, that there is a process in periodic review that I believe Bob Rindy from the department will probably talk about in which Ben's issue can be addressed. And secondly, we have House Bill 2254. We believe that is going to, and we are among those working quite hard on it, as is Damian Smirnick from the City of Bend. And I believe we're in the same place on that and coming up with a streamlined method to do urban growth boundary expansions. Unless there's any other questions, I think that's it. Thank you.
Mr. Rindy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. And we're here to help on this. I think we want to at first make it clear that the concept is one that we don't necessarily have a strong opinion. And it is simply that it is already available. And there's a lot of advantages to having a process that already is available and works. Periodic review is a method by which a city can amend its urban growth boundary, and has built into it, in both in statute and a set of administrative rules that we've worked on for about 20 years, a way for a city to have a work program and sequentially have work tasks approved. And so that's a main message I would like to give you today, is just to caution you that we already have a process. If you were to adjust this bill, and in our letter, I'm not going to go into the details here, but we've called out four, I think, major problems in just the construction and the drafting of this bill for a new process that allows sequential review. I think these are fundamental concerns that we have to start over and rewrite this. I am pretty sure that we would certainly help do that, but in the end, I'm pretty sure that what we would end up with is something that looks very much like periodic review. With one advantage to periodic review, it has been litigated. There's case law. There's a long history of it. We know how it works. We know what the words in the statute means. And I would really caution you about creating a process that's substantially the same thing with new laws and new words, all of which become the subject of litigation. And that's definitely one of the reasons we've had litigation in the land use process, especially in the early years of any statute. And so I think periodic review works for Bend. We have been in discussions with the city, and including this morning, as you heard. And we really do think that the process as it exists today would absolutely provide this method. It was designed for what the city is trying to do. And for that reason, primarily, we would urge that you at least consider that you don't need this bill. If there's some reason, and we haven't identified it, why this would not work for Bend, why the periodic review process itself needs adjustment, we would certainly prefer to make those adjustments than to create a new process. But you also heard about 2254. That's the process that was enacted in 2013 with very much help from Rep. Clem, and we appreciate that. We're working on that. We're already starting to call the old process the long way, or the traditional process, because indeed I think the new 2254 process, it's everything about it is intended to be more streamlined, faster, And I don't understand the testimony you received about how it wouldn't work for a city that's behind, because that certainly hasn't come up in our discussions. We think that it would work well for Bend or for other cities, but it's an option. They can, all cities can choose to use the traditional process, which this bill speaks to. We would just, we believe that part of the traditional process is the currently existing periodic review process, and that it's well designed to do what Bend wants. And we think fairly quickly, if the city agrees, we could move them into that process and achieve the sequential review that they're requesting through this bill.
Okay. So here's my instructions. Why don't you meet with them and see if you can get their consent that that'll work? And if I haven't heard anything about that by about next Tuesday, why don't you work on rewriting this so you can live with it?
Right.
I'm just going to move on.
Okay.
All right. We've got a bunch of people on other bills. So that you got a week. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3282. Let me open House Bill 3368, and John Roberts from Hood River County and AOC, can you come up? And then we're going to, this is a 100-mile witness or more, and then we're going to switch over and hear the beginning part of 3214 before we finish the work session, because I know we've had people waiting. So tell us, this is the home occupations, the wedding issue. Tell us about that.
Thank you, Chair Clement, representatives. My name is John Roberts. I serve in the capacity as a community development director for Hood River County, and I'm really speaking to you as a planning director and planner. And I'll just try to provide a little more background that Senator Thompson and Representative Johnson already provided. Hood River County is responsible for getting this legislative concept introduced. And really how it came about is, as was mentioned, weddings are a really big thing in Hood River. And I think the factor that makes them so special is the scenery. And as a result, weddings over the last couple decades were starting to have impacts and certain nuisances. And as a result of that, the county created a committee. And they created a committee to address weddings because in our ordinance, weddings weren't clearly spelled out in the exclusive farm use zone. The only way through our ordinance we could really permit them was through a home occupation. So the result of this committee that was formed in 2004, Hood River County adopted basically a wedding ordinance. And the wedding ordinance actually won a couple of awards and was seen as a model code. I don't know if any other communities or counties adopted it, but certainly a lot of other jurisdictions throughout the state looked at this model code. And the model code really does a good job regulating these things. It takes a lot of things into consideration. A lot of things are fleshed out, and you get good results. And I think another benefit of the ordinance was it gave farmers another opportunity or a way to supplement their income. And so things were going really well with this ordinance and permitting weddings in Hood River County. However, in 2012, a LUBA case came out. It was Green versus Douglas County. And in that LUBA opinion, it stated home occupations must substantially take place in structures. As you can imagine, having a wedding in Hood River County, we're getting that iconic view of Mount Hood as the number one priority that created some issue. And I think there's even the license plate bill being introduced to show Mount Hood, right? So that was the first issue that people didn't want to be having their weddings in a bar. And the second issue that is beginning to sort of reveal itself is, as a result, people are starting to build barns for non-farm uses for weddings, which is actually then taking more land out of farm use. So what was introduced was a very narrow concept, as mentioned by Representative Johnson, that was, again, allow weddings that have been permitted through a home occupation to be held outdoors. I think it's what's been introduced to you is a little broader. I don't know the details of that, but that's a little background and the intent of Hood River County.
So, one question. Hood River County has not adopted the events statute that was referenced earlier that would allow outdoor events and things. Senate Bill, I think it was 968. But a county has to actually adopt that if they want
right.
to.
Right. We have not adopted that.
Okay. So, Mark, I am going to ask you to go really quickly.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to move. Oh, we've got two people here that I just realized are not regular inhabitants of the building, Mitch and Robin. I'm going to ask to come up after this. Go ahead.
Sure. Mark Nystrom, Association of Oregon Counties. We support the bill in concept.
I like that. Okay. Great. So Mitch and Robin, can you come up? And we'll come back to this one. But I want to switch over to 3214 after we hear from Mitch and Robin.
Okay.
So this is still 3368. Please.
Yeah, good afternoon, Chairman Clem and committee members. My name is Mitch Williams. I live in Brightwood, Oregon, and I'm speaking as a resident from a neighborhood that is directly affected by the decision of this committee regarding House Bill 3368. This is a twist. But I think it's very important. I'm a lifelong resident of Oregon, and I appreciate this opportunity to comment today before you regarding this. And I thank all the committee members for their time. I believe the best way to protect the productive future of farm and forests is to be vigilant against legislative bills that potentially threaten to weaken and substantially alter the resource lands as we know them today. House Bill 3368 would accomplish the wholesale gutting of a practical criteria that is currently applied to farm and forest. This bill would also have far-reaching potential negative effects on other zoned lands, which would include residential. Following, these are the issues that caused me to request this committee to reject House Bill 3368. This bill eviscerates standards of home occupation by allowing industrial and or other inappropriate activities, and I'm referring now to the bill itself and Section C of Representative Johnson's bill. He adds what we've been talking about this afternoon, in an outdoor setting on the lot or parcel on which this dwelling is located. That is the complete portion of major change. This change is completely contrary to the purpose of home occupation. This slipshod legislation would create conflict between landowners all across the state of Oregon. Further, the proposed bill also appears to me is specifically modeled for a log house manufacturing operation located in Clackamas County, which is not permitted for the timber zone that it is in, and it's by definition of not meeting primary processing. And this industrial operation has proven to have substantial negative impacts to the near 70-year-old residential subdivision located immediately across the street. Consider, this from Clackamas County's zone ZDO's 822.02. Home occupations are required to be clearly subordinate to the residential use of the property. 3368 turns ZDO 82202 on its head. The double wide or house that is or would be ultimately subordinate to the business is not going to be able to compete with the footprint of almost anything on a home occupation that could come through with the reading of this bill as I interpret it. Allowing home occupations to operate outdoors would be permitting de facto disallowed land uses potentially to occur on resource lands and other zoned lands. In closing, I'd like I say that this bill is going to create unnecessary conflict in rural Oregon and interface areas of residential subdivisions.
I urge this committee to stop this bill here. And thank you very much for your time. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Robin, did you want to add something?
Pardon me? I was going to testify.
Yep. Okay, please.
Okay. Chair Clem and members of the committee, I'm Robin Jacobs. I live in Sandy, 11 miles east of Sandy, up in the Mount Hood area. I'm testifying on my own behalf, on behalf of a community of neighbors in the Mount Hood area that oppose this bill that would allow outdoor use of resource lands for home occupations. This bill proposes to fundamentally change home occupation regulations that provide critical and necessary dwelling and/or building use requirements, space limit requirements, and off-site impact controls. Home occupations are intended to be conducted inside a dwelling or building to prevent outdoor visual signs of the business, control the size and scale of the business by limiting indoor square footage permitted, limit indoor space to ensure the business remains subordinate to the residential use, and prevent off-site impacts such as off-site noise and environmental impacts and conditions. This bill proposes to remove those core regulations necessary for residential home occupations to exist. If home occupations were conducted outdoors, land use zoning regulations, land use procedures and processes, and the land use public process would come into play and would be required for land uses otherwise disallowed in the underlying zone. If business activities cannot be fully operated indoors and or cannot be operated within allowed space provisions, such a business would appear unsuitable as a home occupation. It is hoped this bill will not pass out of committee. Thank you for your consideration of these concerns.
Okay, great. Thank you. We're going to have to do some more work on this bill, but for now I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3368, open a public hearing on House Bill 3214, and ask Dave and Rich to come up and tell us about this. And I'll carry over House Bill 3368 to take the other three people next Thursday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, here on behalf of House Bill 3214. One thing to make clear before we even start down the road on the discussion of this bill does not deal with farm or forest land. It does not deal with land that's zoned for farm use or forest use under Goal 3 and 4. What it says, and the heart of the bill is in on page 2, lines 27 through 30. What it says is that an exception to goals 3 and 4, which is the equivalent of a variance, an exception to goal 3 and 4 is not required for property that has never been zoned for farm and forest use. Goal 3 is LCDC's agricultural lands goal. Goal 4 is LCDC's forest lands goal. Goal 3 lands are typically zoned for exclusive farm use. They're in an EFU zone. Goal 4 forest lands are found in a forest goal, forest land zoning designation by the county. What this bill says is if your property has never been in a farm or forest zone, you do not need to take an exception to the farm and forest goals in order to go from one non-farm and forest zone to another farm and forest zone. And we've got an example that involves
another non-farm and forest.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So if I'm, for example, if my property is currently zoned rural commercial and I want to rezone to rural industrial, I do not need to take an exception if this bill were to pass to the farm and forest goals because I'm not in a farm or forest zone to begin with. This bill resolves a case from LUBA where there are three LUBA referees. In this case, out of Clackamas County, which Mr. Vile will talk about, there were three different opinions from the three different LUBA referees. So they couldn't agree on the logic. This bill would resolve that, and basically, at the end result, if this bill were not to pass in the particular situation that Mr. Vile talks about, a property zoned for rural residential use, where LUBA held that in order for them to go from rural residential use to rural industrial use, they needed to take an exception to the farm and forest goals, which made the county and everybody shake their head. Well, why do we have to do that? We've never been zoned. This property has never been zoned for farm or forest use. If this bill were not to pass, and if that LUBA decision were to hold, the house paving property that we'll talk about would still be rural residential. It wouldn't be farm and forest land, because in the years that Clackamas County had zoned this property, going clear back to the 60s, it's never been zoned for farm or forest use. So that's the point of the bill. We're not talking about anything that impacts farm or forest lands.
Please. Rich Vile, Vile Fotheringham. I'm also chairing Washington County's Planning Commission, and will tell you that this issue has now cropped its head up in Washington County. And I'm also on the Farm Bureau Board of Directors in Washington County, and we've seen this issue come before us there. I understand our county board may differ in its opinion with the state Farm Bureau folks, but I trust that this committee can probably see the value of what I'm about to describe. As was talked about a moment ago, what we have is a situation where Mr. King, who's with us today only to answer questions if necessary, is the third generation family patriarch of a paving company that's been in existence on this site in Washington County for approximately 20 years. The site was zoned rural residential, but about 20 years before they came on the property, it had already been built and used as a auto and truck repair operation and a factory, in essence, for the building of trailers. So they bought a property that was already being used as an industrial site, continued to use it as an industrial site. When neighbors became difficult, we went to the county, asked for a zoning rezone to rural industrial based on the fact that it had been that all along. It had never been zoned farm or forest, as was stated, and yet when we got to the planning process, that was the thing that the neighbors said, is you have to take an exception, and not an irrevocably committed exception, but a reasons exception, which, if you're familiar with that statement in the law, it is a very complex and very loose set of definitions that one has to try and meet. So we decided to go ahead and appeal that to LUBA. We actually got a favorable result from the county commissioners. The neighbors appealed it to LUBA, and it was actually board member Holston, who's the senior member of the LUBA board, that observed that, in the LUBA opinion, that this just didn't make any sense. And the problem was this: there was an administrative rule that had very, very confusing language in it dealing with the question of whether farm and forest exception needed to be taken. It's clear that it was never zoned farm or forest, and yet in this rule it makes it unclear as to whether or not, if it's stated rural, you have to now go back. In this case, it would be 35 years and try to adopt a rule that would match what the county already did back when it was originally zoned, if you're following what I'm saying. So for that reason, we're asking that the committee pass this bill out, and hopefully we'll get some resolution for our client. Thank you.
Great. Okay. I am going to... any questions for these, for this group? Okay. Let me... let me carry over House Bill 3214. We've got three other folks to testify on it, and I will... have them come back and deal with it. Sorry, we don't want to make you come back, so you don't need to come back for that. But we'll have Mr. Honeycutt here at least, I'm sure.
Yeah, do I have to come back?
You do.
Yeah.
So let me close the public hearing. House Bill 3214, carry over House Bill 3214. Want to try and do it real quick? I think everybody's ready to go on 2400. Yeah. Let's get 2400 done. Let me open a work session on House Bill 2400.
Chair Clem, I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendments dated 3-23-15.
Vice Chair Post moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendments dated 3-23-15. Is there any discussion? Representative Witt.
Yes. Can we briefly, for the record, cover what that the points are? Yes.
Uh-huh. Ian, can
sure.
you go?
Yeah, Chair Klein, members of the committee, the amendment would extend the deadline to submit a report to April 1st, 2015, and it would deem any reports issued before January 31st, 2015 as satisfied. It would also require the Water Resource Commission to make seasonally varying flows a condition of new or existing water storage aquifer recharge permits or limited license for the storage of water. And It expands the language of the statute to also include current holders of water storage, aquifer recharge permits, or limited license for the storage of water to be used as a determination for seasonally varying flows.
Thank you very much.
Any further discussion? Is there any objection to the Dash 4s? If not, the amendment's adopted.
Chair Clem, I move that House Bill 2400 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Post moves House Bill 2400 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Gilliam.
Aye.
Representative Gompert.
Excused.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hump.
Aye.
Vice Chair Post.
Aye.
Chair Clark.
Aye. Motion passes. Representative Gomberg will carry that bill since he's not with us. And with that, everything's carried over. I will adjourn the committee.